Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
So, weekend two of the NatWest Six Nations is done and dusted. It's Ireland and England who sit top of the table on 9 points apiece. Ireland top by dint of points difference, but it's all very tight. No points for Italy still. We have Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent here in studio. Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Less drama for Ireland at the weekend than a week ago in Paris. 56 points to 19 winners. 8 tries scored against Italy at the Aviva. And then England didn't score in the second half, but beat Wales ultimately 12 points to 6. And then I think potentially the first exciting good game, sustained good game across 80 minutes of the championship thus far was Scotland 32, France 26, the Scots twice coming back from 10 points down. So that is where we stand. Injury news, Rory O'Connor is chief in everyone amongst everyone's thoughts. Yeah. Bad news, firstly, very shortly, is Robbie Henshaw had surgery today. He's gone. Unfortunately, that's over. No chance.
No, yeah, he's been ruled out for the Six Nations as definitive as you get with these injury updates. He's gone.
Tyke Furlong, who you would have all noticed pulling up with that hamstring injury, will be on OTBAM tomorrow morning. Recorded a chat with the lads today. The news on Tyke Furlong, much, much better.
Felt a bit of tightness in the hammy. More of a precaution. You know, you probably don't want to stay on and risk the further injury, so feels good and yeah, extremely hopeful for available for selection for Wales.
All right, so because with hamstrings, it's everything from like a career ender in Paul O'Connell's case to it's grand in a couple of weeks, and no one ever really gets to know until you test it out again. Is that how it works?
I suppose you have to. You can never count your chickens before you hatch, can they? So obviously, you have to see who responds to treatment, but. No, it was only a little bit of tightness and you know, it feels good, yeah.
Yeah. When that happens 3 or 4 minutes into a game, are you like, oh, balls? Like, obviously, you build yourself up. It's the whole hype and you want to test yourself against the Italian front row and you don't get a chance to.
Yeah, a bit anticlimactic, I would have said. Probably feel sorrier for Andrew Porter having played 77 minutes. It's not overly hectic for a tight head prop, but it's kind of a weird one. You're probably built up all week, mentally, physically, you get to game day in 3 minutes and you're out. So it is what it is. And
does it change your preparation at all so it doesn't happen? Like, do you have to be aware of it now that it's happened?
Yeah, you probably do with the rehab, but you know, it's not a major issue. And as I said, I'd be highly confident to being available for Wales. So you have to tick the boxes and make sure you're not putting yourself at risk.
There you are. So that is good news. Tyke Furlong, by the way, an ambassador for Vodafone, who are urging fans to get behind the team ahead of the upcoming game against Wales on February 24th. You can visit the Vodafone Ireland Facebook page for all the latest hashtag Team of Us news. And you can watch that full interview. That's going out tomorrow, OTBAM from 7:45, Facebook, Periscope, youtube.com/offtheball. In short, Eddie O'Sullivan, he's generally Tyke Furlong thrown in after Johnny Sexton and Conor Murray on the most important Irish players list, so that's big.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, set early stall in the last couple of years as one of the top tight heads in the world, which is a hell of an achievement. He had a great Lions tour and he's a key guy for the Irish team. It's optimistic. I was worried that he limped off with a hamstring. You know, I've grade one hamstrings are, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks a lot of the time, and you basically can walk no problem after. I'd be just a bit concerned he was limping. He's quite optimistic and upbeat, as he would be. But it's a tricky one, a hamstring, because if you re-damage it, you know, you get scar tissue and stuff, and you can get a history of them. Look, Rob Kearney has been plagued through his whole career with them. And, you know, there's also stress and scrummaging in those situations as well. It's kind of an isometric contraction where you're trying to hold everything in place. There's no flexion. Yeah. So it's a lot of stress on the hamstrings, but hopefully he's good to go. He seems upbeat, so
yeah.
Hopefully he knows himself. You know, a lot of athletes do know their own body.
Yeah, because he was half joking, Rory, with the wry smile. Nobody believes me. I'm trying to tell everyone I'm fine. We'll have to see. Obviously, in that scrum as well, there's extra strain in the hamstrings. So I guess we're just all hoping.
Yeah, and I would imagine he's probably not going to take an active part in training down in Athlone today. Mm. Sorry, this week when they assemble tomorrow night and then train on Thursday and Wednesday. Wednesday, Thursday. And I think it's until he actually tries the flat-out sprint, until he actually takes a scrum. They do live scrummaging and training, I think, on Tuesday. So I think until he puts himself in that position, if they're going to put himself in that position, they may hold off and take a chance. I mean, he is that important. Although Porter, the benefit of this, if there is to be an upside, was that Porter got 77 minutes. And while Italy are not the scrummaging force of old, he looked pretty good.
So, as we said earlier, the news on Henshaw is not good. He's gone. So, in terms of replacement for the Welsh game, Ronan O'Gara floated the possibility of Keith Earls, and I've heard nobody else say they agree with that. There's Chris Farrell, who impressed people a bit in November. Shane Horgan has mentioned Joey Carberry. There's McCluskey. And then there is the possibility, Joe Schmidt in his post-match press conference said, Gary Ringrose won't be back in time for Leinster Scarlets this weekend coming, but they figure actually he would get the all clear to play come the Welsh game. Now, he won't have played much rugby, to say the least, and whether you throw him in or not is an issue. So you're the head coach in the conversation. You've all that swirling around.
Yeah, well, look, whatever way this breaks, it's not ideal, because Henshaw is a huge loss. Even if, you know, the dream team in the middle of the field is Carberry and Henshaw.
Ringrose.
Ringrose. And if Ringrose comes back, the problem is he's played little or no rugby. Turn him straight into a Six Nations test game will be a huge risk, just from match practice point of view. I mean, it's pretty obvious, I think, from Leinster's end, he's not going to play next weekend in the Pro 14. So he'd be coming in literally cold to the Six Nations. Massive risk. The obvious one going on the autumn is Chris Farrell. He did pretty well in the game. He would have played with Bundiaki in that game, and it keeps everybody else, all the chess pieces in the same place. If you start twiddling around, Keith Earls is another one, but his experience at outside centre is very limited. I don't know if it's any real experience at outside centre other than jumping in to fill a spot. Carberry's another one, but again, he's not an outside centre. He could struggle physically in that position. So McCluskey is another one, but the problem with McCluskey is it means he's an inside centre. That means probably bumping Bundiaki to outside. And, you know, people talk about outside centre, about being able to distribute, you know, it's the key place for distribution. But the truth of the matter is the bigger problem is defence. And, you know, I'm really impressed with the way Henshaw has jumped into the 13 slot and defended really well in that place. It takes a lot of work. And we took granted for years with the best defensive 13 in the world in Brian O'Driscoll. It is the most difficult place to manage that space, knowing to make early reads, to push out or to bite in. And all those names on the list, bar Gary Ringrose, would not be of that calibre, let's be fair. And even the obvious choice, I think, Chris Farrell wouldn't be up to that speed, to be honest with you, for that level. So there's a risk in all of this. But yeah, it's just probably one of the worst injuries you could have. I actually think the Furlong injury, even if he's not back, I think we can manage that a lot better. We have more depth in that area, but we really are going to struggle at 13 without Henshaw. That's the thing that worries me the most.
I think it will be Farrell, based on the fact that he'll be in camp this week and they'll get a good number of minutes under their belt. He was one of the extra men training at the Aviva on Saturday. He wasn't released to Munster, so he's been in right at the coalface of it, so he's seen the preparation. He's probably shadowed Robbie Henshaw over the last 2 weeks, so there's benefit in that. I think Rory Scannell's in the squad as well. That would necessitate moving Bundiaki, but yeah, I think it'll be Farrell. I think based on November, he did quite well in that game, and based on the fact that they can get a good week's training, Ringrose is not going to Athlone as far as I'm aware, so I'm almost certain it'll be Farrell.
Yeah, they're going to Athlone for a couple of days this week for a camp. So Eddie, no tries in Paris and then eight of the weekend. How do you assess the Irish attack, which was a slight area of concern when we spoke last week?
I don't think you can, like, we all know that we're going to give Italy a shellacking, you know. The Italy defence is pretty appalling. So I don't think we're any wiser in our attack after the weekend. Yeah, you say, oh, we got 8 tries. Two of them were intercepts, fair enough, but we got 6 tries. Or, you know, but I just think you'd expect us to score 6 tries against a team like Italy. I don't think there's any to be taken out of the fact we scored 6 tries. We did it again last year. We did it the year before. They're just a bad defensive team, and they were bad against England. England should have probably scored more points against them than they did as well. And that was England's fault, not Italy's great defence. So I don't think we're any wiser on our attack. And that was the problem with the Italian game. And that's not anybody's fault. You can only play the teams in front of you. And Ireland went out and did the job on Italy. They scored 8 tries. But the truth of the matter is we're not any wiser about our attack, because do you really think we're going to get twice that easily against Wales or twice that easily even against Scotland?
It's hard to imagine. Are we any the wiser? Does that extend to the whole performance? Are we any the wiser about anything really?
Well, if we can, it's probably good for the teams to get to score tries and to put some plays together and get the energy and the confidence out of successfully executing them. But the problem is, and you have to be realistic, is that I can't see other teams giving up that easy. No, it doesn't mean we won't score a couple of tries against Wales, but it won't be that easy. But probably the thing that the takeaway for me was, it was a worrying takeaway, was that our defence, we gave up three tries. We got deconstructed three times by Italy, who again, let's be honest here, there's bigger stress tests coming out against our defence, from Wales and from Scotland and from England. So the problem with the Italy test is we got the job done, but I didn't think we're ever going to be wiser at the back end of Italy, to be quite frank with you. Because the stress tests on our defence and our attack, I didn't believe we're going to be there. But the only takeaway for me is I'm a little bit worried about our defence after Italy, because three tries against Italy is not a good outing for our defence.
Are you any wiser, Rory?
I don't think, not in terms of the attack. I think Eddie makes valid points. I know it was all kind of garbage time, but Schmidt would say that they want to be an 80-minute team who play through all of that and retain their focus at the time when he expected, I think, the bench to come on and finish the game as strongly as the team that started it. And the team that started it, bar the two injuries, had produced six tries. So I think the expectation was that the bench would come on and finish the job and ram home the advantage even more. And that didn't really happen. And I was disappointed about that because I thought Schmidt had picked a very, very strong bench full of impact. Now, obviously, Porter was on earlier than expected, and there was a backline rejig, and I think Jordan Larmour struggled a little bit in those one-on-one individual moments that we saw. Possibly didn't help that Keith Earls was playing in the centre. I think he's much better on the wing. It just suits him a lot better. And they switched off. But, I wonder how much the Henshaw injury and played into that, the early changes. I'm sure, whatever Joe Schmidt was going to do with Murray and Sexton, he was definitely going to get them off after he saw two of his key guys go off. So there are mitigating factors, but I suppose this is a team that don't look for excuses, so they'll look into that. From an attacking point of view, very good, but it's always very good against Italy, and Wales will be a very different test.
And there was just I don't know, were you there, Eddie? Obviously, Rory, I know you were, but there was a general flatness about the occasion. Inevitably, once the first two, three, four tries went in, the injuries happened. Even Shane Jennings was saying pitch side, there wasn't much talk on the pitch between the players. This Italy game, increasingly as well as Irish rugby has improved and the novelty of putting 50, 60 points on Italy has pretty much evaporated. This is just a game to get out of the way now, Rory. That is what this has boiled down to.
Yeah, get your bonus point, build a score, make sure you're not at a disadvantage when it comes to the final reckoning. Because Ireland will go back to say the 2014 win and the score they got against Italy probably got them over the line in the end. They won the title based on those tries. So it's about building a score. It's about getting yourself in a really strong position. But that's it. Get in, get out, get the win, get the bonus point. And the merits of Italy in the tournament overall is probably a wider discussion.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that seems to rumble on. The Italy thing, I mean, the strongest argument for keeping Italy and avoiding this relegation business, Eddie, is, there's two, I suppose. One, you don't ever want to risk losing Scotland or, France having a terrible year, and then there's basically, there's no Six Nations, you lose one of them. And honestly, it's the fact that Rome is a nicer weekend away for people than Tbilisi, and that's probably not a million miles, I'm a bit glib, but not a million miles away from the truth.
Well, that's true, and anyone who's been to Tbilisi will tell you it's a hell of a long way from Dublin. It's a hell of a trip, so it's a lot harder to get to. But I mean, I've been there with the US back in 2010, and it is becoming a real hotbed of rugby, and there's. They've kind of moved away from soccer as the national sport. They're trying to push, rugby as their national sport, and they're building academies all over the country. So they are coming, but the questions are there ready yet. They do get huge support. I remember in 2010 being in Murrayfield with the Eagles just to watch South Africa, Scotland, and there was about 35,000 people there. The following Saturday, we played in Tbilisi against Georgia, and there was 42,000 of us. So they're getting huge crowds, and it's becoming very popular for the supporters. But having said all that, you'd have to ask the question. They do come out and scare the hell out of people, as I know better than anybody. But the question is, could they pitch up in the Six Nations, over 7 weeks and do any better than Italy do, and that's questionable. You
right.
know, that
okay.
is questionable. And you'd have to say, now having said that, they are ranked above Italy in the world rankings. They are on 12th and Italy are on 14th, you know.
Yeah.
So like they could point to that and say, well, we're higher up the rankings. But sustainability is the issue, and you know, it's a bigger tournament, and you know, it'd be a big decision to make. And there's always a risk then on someone has a bad year and
yeah.
somebody goes out because you don't want to lose. So
yeah.
But
yeah.
That from that point of view, I think that there's a long road to travel before you'll find relegation of the Six Nations.
Just a point that we don't need to labour, because I think this can sometimes be interpreted by listeners as a general kind of cribbing of the media. But it is interesting, given that for his previous 52 or 51, there was a Babas game in there as well. But 51 games in charge of Ireland. Joe Schmidt has generally, Rory, done a briefing, as it's called, a huddle with the Daily Press. So, in short, a game goes full-time. The coach does the broadcast media partners, so that's TV and radio rights holders who have the game. Then there is a 15-minute press conference, which, again, has everybody. So it will have the print, it'll have online, it will have radio, it'll have TV. That's open to everybody. And then for the previous 51 games and pretty much every coach there's ever been, he will then give maybe 10, 15 minutes of his time just in a corridor with the print journalists who will hold those quotes until Monday. It's fresh content. It's maybe a more considered view. It's a look ahead to the week. So Brendan O'Brien of The Examiner was in doing the paper review, and he's a member of the Irish Rugby Writers. And so this the RFU said this is not happening after the Italian game. Brendan O'Brien was saying he doesn't know the reason. So a reason doesn't seem to have been given. There were meetings between the Irish Rugby Writers and the RFU during the week to try and find some kind of solution. That doesn't seem to have happened. And the phrase, the relationship is at an all-time low, is being bandied about. So what's going on here? Has this been bubbling away for a long time? Was this coming?
Yeah, I think it probably was. I remember as far back as 2015 having emergency meetings just before the World Cup trying to save the huddle. It's something that Joe Schmidt has, to my knowledge, never been a fan of. The format doesn't suit him in terms of the, you know, a group of 8 or 9 journalists kind of crowded around him. He hasn't liked that as far as I'm aware. And at different times over the course of his time in charge, he's tried to kind of remove it. There's been kind of back and forth, and eventually we've gone on with the status quo. And this time it's been taken away. We had a meeting last Thursday between myself and I'm the honorary secretary of the Rugby Writers. Jerry Thornley and Simon Lewis met with members of the RFU, and on the foot of that meeting,
what's the tone of those meetings?
Look, it's people working together. You know, we all wanted to find a solution. Ultimately, the person, you know, the RFU went to Joe Schmidt and put kind of the different ideas that were there as kind of compromises and stuff like that to him, and he decided that he didn't want to go ahead with it, and that was communicated to us on Saturday morning. And it's a break from the norm. It just, you know, the way I would see it, it's a chance for the IRFU to set the agenda after each game, to start the week afresh. They don't see it that way anymore. Part of a wider kind of change in the way they're doing their media and stuff like that. So, it's disappointing from our point of view. But I mean, I'm sure there's listeners out there who don't really give a damn.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and they're entitled to not give a damn. I mean, by the same token, I think you want the team covered by independent journalists. Like Brendan O'Brien made the point very correctly on Sunday in here. The alternative is you'll just get Irish Rugby or TV or IRFU TV and the IRFU social media channels, and it'll be you head down a road then where journalists go out of business. It will be the most bland possible coverage of the team. Everything will be great. And if people want that and just want to watch the matches and not read anything of any interest during the week, that's fine. Stop buying papers and don't worry about this conversation for the next 2 or 3 minutes. The other thing that happened, which is not unusual, it has happened before, is people would have seen a journalist was excluded from a briefing post Paris. That journalist was Rory O'Connor, who's here. There was what Johnny Waterson called in the Irish Times an honest mistake made in a piece you had written, which was corrected very quickly. Just a genuine wrong name put in the wrong place, kind of territory corrected. I know you don't want to talk about that at all right now, and that's absolutely fine. So we don't have to do that. But that would seem to be symptomatic generally of a general cooling in relations. And of late as well, there's been the Grobler story. He made his debut over the weekend as well. The Roy Best faced questions which they didn't like. Bundiaki in November, there's been, I think it was mentioned to you, maybe speculation about Irish player contracts as well is not welcomed, although it's going to happen from what I can see. It's a professional sport. The point is, anyway, there does seem to be a real cooling in temperature, and you've got all of these issues swirling around, and so it seems we're going to get less and less and less cooperation between IRFU, certainly the senior team, and media, unless some solution I can't foresee is
found. Yeah, look, there's always back and forth on certain issues between journalists and the IRFU management. They don't usually make it, you know, out to the public domain. There's always kind of people unhappy with certain things. That's natural. I suppose, yeah, we've reached a tipping point where Joe has decided he doesn't want to do this anymore. We've seen a reduction in overall access during the week. There's no longer a manager on a Monday. There's no longer a coach, an assistant coach, on a Friday before games. All little things that just add up to a general reduction in coverage. And yeah, the huddle afterwards, as you say, 51 games, he's done it and he's decided not to do it anymore. I think it's all part of a wider battle. And I think Brendan really spoke about it very well yesterday.
He did, yeah. And were you okay with that conference going ahead without you, or was there time for deliberation with journalists?
It was very short notice, and look, I don't really want to get into it. It was you know, as I say, look, things happen between us and the RFU all the time. We usually deal with it ourselves, and that was the way we tried to do it.
Okay, well, that's your prerogative. The more ongoing issue is the daily briefings. Did you? It's interesting. It seems Joe Schmidt doesn't like that format, Eddie, of 5, 6, 7, 8 guys firing questions to him kind of ahead of the Monday. You're one of the few people who's been in that position. So give us your read on this whole dynamic between Joe Schmidt and the media.
Well, I'm surprised to hear it's deteriorating to the extent it's outlined there, because there's a number of sides to it. One is the RFU need the media, and the media need the RFU. It's a symbiotic relationship, and you have to work together. And of course, every so often, there's disagreements or there's set tos over different things. But by and large, even though it's never a coach's favourite part of the job, it is part of your job to engage the media and try and answer questions as honestly and as forthright as you can. And a lot of the time you get asked questions that you might like answering, because it's about, like, why did you concede 3 tries, or why did you make that substitution and something has gone wrong. So that's part and parcel of it. But what I'm surprised is that the RFU can say why that's been cancelled. Mm. Because to take it away and say nothing, it doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, they should say, look, here's the reason for it, and you can like or dislike, but at least you know where you stand. And you consider things are going so well for the Irish team, you know, things are in a really good place.
It's not like Schmidt, you know, is getting a grilling loss after loss. he's probably the most celebrated coach in the history of rugby here.
I could write a few of those chapters about getting grilled.
I'm sure,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but look, that's the way it rolls, and it's part and parcel of it. And it surprised me. I'm actually a bit surprised that things are in where they are, given that the team has been going well. It's on a run of wins, and, you know, the whole thing around rugby has been positive, you know. I mean, I don't know anybody who's been having a go, for the sake of putting it that way. So I'm just surprised it's deteriorated a little bit. I don't see the need for it. And look, I think as long as journalists give their opinions as they believe them to be, and they don't personalise anything, and it's, you know, I think that's fair game. Criticism is criticism, and everybody doesn't have to have agree with it. I've often been criticised and I didn't agree with it, but the point is, people are entitled to be critical as they see fit, provided they don't personalise it. I think if you go personal, I'd have a problem with that as a coach, and I would have had when I lost coach. But I don't think journalists do that, to be fair. I think the Irish media are they might be wrong sometimes, but that's their opinion, and that's fine. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And that's why I'm just surprised that it's kind of got to that point with everything going so well. I know if the team was going badly, had it been on a run of losses, or, you know, it can get fairly fraught, because if you can kind of find something a bit of a bunker if you're getting pounded at times, you know, from outside, and there's sometimes the team and the coach is circling the wagons, and, you know, and that can all use your advantage, by the way, as well.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm just surprised that it's kind of got to that point, given where we are. We're still in the hunt for a Grand Slam. You know, we've won our last, is it 7 or 8 or 9 tests now?
9 in a row, I think.
Yeah, everything's going swimmingly well, so I'm just surprised it has got to that. I mean, and I would have thought at least the RFU should at least tell the journalists why the briefing isn't happening. And I understand the need for it, to be honest with you, because, like, with the way media has exploded in recent years, with, like, you've got television, radio, you've got websites, you've got blogging, like, there's a huge swathe of information out there, and if you're a journalist who's depending on doing a piece on a Monday, you need something fresh to write about because everything's been written about on Sunday. So it's understandable why journalists would want a sidebar. And I did a lot of sidebars with groups of journalists and individual journalists just to give them a... Because if you put a quote out there in front of 150 people, everybody has it. And to be fair, like, journalists are looking for maybe a little bit, and they have a question. If they ask a question of 150 people, it could be a very good question. Everybody has the answer to it. Whereas they can ask you in a smaller group or privately, that's their piece of information. And that's quite understandable. And I think there's even more pressure on journalists given the way the media has exploded now across all the platforms. So, it's just a pity.
It's very strange because, I mean, you can watch back the full press conference on YouTube the second it's done on Saturday. So come Monday, it's all the same quotes in the papers today. Let's touch on the other games then. England-Wales. Well, this was a strange game in many respects, Eddie. So England were, what, 12-3 up at half-time? And first 20 minutes, two Johnny May tries. And Owen Farrell put in an early claim for player of the tournament. And it turns into a kind of strange arm wrestle in the second half.
Yeah, I was watching the game and I kept thinking to myself, why are England doing this? Like, I thought they had a really good first 20 minutes. They kept the ball in hand. They ran hard. They were like a bit of like a soccer team once. They got two tries up. Like, we're 2-0 up. Let's just close up shop here for the next hour. And they either just pounded the hell out of Wales. I know the weather wasn't good, but, you know, it rains all the time. It's like the notion that if it rains, we have to play a different game. I'm not buying into that completely. That's a complete monsoon. But they played a much narrower game. And then every chance they got, they kicked the ball down the field and back their defence. I just thought it was a weird one because I thought at one stage Wales were in big trouble. Like, when May got the second try, I think Wales were like in a bad place. Had England got another try before half time, you banked them to get on a bonus point win at the end. But credit to Wales as well. I thought they dug in, like, they defended brilliantly. They took everything England threw at them. And I thought the TMO decision was dreadful. I think that was a try. It was my gut reaction off the bat that's a try. And then to find it wasn't. I understand completely why Warren Gatland is really upset about that. That, you know, that shouldn't be happening. But it does happen, as we know. If you look at the Lions tour, same down the Lions tour with the final penalty that was awarded then reversed incorrectly. So this is becoming a feature. But anyway, on Saturday I thought, England were kind of shutting up shop, which amazed me. Wales hung in and they could have sneaked it. When Schindler got that line break and he kicked the ball away for some reason and they had... the great tackle into touch, but all those were moments where, and they turned over ball at key times, Wales had kicked themselves, so the knock-ons and stuff. Wales could have really stole that game, which worries me a bit because they'll be disappointed after Twickenham, but they'll be looking forward to coming to Dublin, put it that way, to save their championship, and that's not good news for us.
Yeah, I must say, Rory, that crossed my mind as well, that this Welsh team have a bit of steel about them, minus 10 lines or something like that with George North and on the bench and Halfpenny's going to be back for Dublin. We're all sort of half looking ahead to Twickenham, but Wales coming to Dublin is a really, really sticky one.
Yeah, Warren Gatland's got a really good record in the last couple of years against Ireland as well. So, and it's a team full of Scarlets, and they came to Dublin last May and beat Munster and Leinster in the semi-final and the final, and probably that shouldn't be discounted too much either. You have to admire the way that they've had the heart of their team ripped out of them and are still able to produce performances. You know, Patchell doesn't go so well after the pressure from Jones, but
Ronan O'Gara thought that was all down to Eddie Jones as well. I just can't believe that Jones saying that on a Wednesday is going to mess up a guy.
Maybe not, but maybe he was. You know, Patchell is inexperienced at that level. Whatever about Jones, he's never played 10 at Twickenham before. He's been playing fullback all year. You know, whether it's probably easier to do it against Scotland and Cardiff, and then you go under the pressure of that massive English team and the pressure that they put on you with their line speed, it makes it a lot more difficult. So, you know, I have to say I was very impressed by Wales. I thought the character they've shown, given the losses, I probably was one of the people who wrote them off a little bit before the tournament. But there's definitely a lot of danger coming Ireland's way in Saturday week.
Yeah, and then a final word then on Murrayfield, where Scotland came back from 10 points down twice. The French had Boxis at 10. They keep kind of chopping and changing there. Ultimately, I mean, it was they scored 4 tries in the first half, none in the second. So the French indiscipline that we saw in Paris just seemed to really catch fire in the second half, and Greg Laidlaw just said thanks very much, and like France seemed to lose this game as opposed to Scotland winning.
Yeah, they put themselves in a really, really good position, and we saw the good things about them in Paris a week previously, their line speed, their aggression at the breakdown, and they just got themselves in this winning position again and managed to throw it away in a very different way. And you know, I'd say Brunel was absolutely fuming with them. They just have this capacity to make bad decisions when other teams don't. Maybe it's fatigue, maybe it's a lack of structure, maybe it's inexperience. I mean, you know, they brought on a lot of inexperienced players who had probably suffered mentally as a result of Johnny Sexton's drop goal. You know, I suppose that can't be discounted, but you know, for Boxeis to do some of the things he did in the last 10 minutes is probably pretty unforgivable, and I wonder will it be a while before we see him in a French shirt again.
Yeah, it was entertaining, Eddie. I mean, if you're French, you're just pulling your hair out.
Well, look, I mean, 6 kickable penalties, 18 points in the second half is just criminal negligence. But we saw it in Paris. I mean, 9 of Ireland's points, I said this last week, 9 of Ireland's points, you wouldn't get them in a JCT match. Like, just crazy penalties, and again, just stupid penalties again. And look, if you look at it, it's very French lack of discipline. I mean, Laporte hammered that out of that successful French team in the noughties, you know, and that was one of his things. But right, France are capable of this, you know, self-destruction. We know they are. And I just, the thing for me which gave me was a warning sign from France's point of view is, even in Paris, Garrido gave away a ludicrous penalty in the second half to Ireland, and the one that Johnny Sexton missed, actually, in fairness. But Garrido is the captain of the team. Mm. And if he's done stupid stuff like that, you know, in terms of discipline-wise, then the other 14 guys are going to think, oh, sure, that's fine. So, like, 6 penalties in the second half is just beyond belief. And, like, France are going over. And their defensive system is all over the shop as well. Like, yeah, you know, like, they just, they defend basically on whatever you think yourself, which is a crazy system.
That's the technical term for that system, is it?
Yeah, whatever you do yourself. And it's just insane. Like, I mean, at this day and age, at this level, that they're running around like lost sheep on the field. And, like, that's the problem is Scotland got out the other side of this game, but I think we still don't know where Scotland are.
Okay.
That's the stupid thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's not writing Scotland off by any stretch. I think we'll see where Scotland are by the time they get to Dublin. But in the meantime, we don't know, because had France, like against Ireland, had France any discipline, they might have won both those games.
Yeah, they could be on 8 points sitting pretty. Okay, we'll leave it there. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, thanks for coming to the studio. Eddie, thanks as ever.
Monday Night Rugby on Off The Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Off The Ball on News Talk.